Yeah, let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 61 to finish at 21,467. S&P 500 down 16 at 2,437. NASDAQ Composite down 50 at 6,188. Russell 2000 small and mid caps off 15 at 1,402. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 4 basis points at 2.15%. Oil down 97 cents at $43.23 per barrel. Gold down a dollar at $12.43.60 an ounce. Tomorrow is the first day of summer. Last check showed 119 degrees here in Phoenix. It's just too hot. National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration reported yesterday that the average global temperature in May of this year was 1.49 degrees above the 20th century May average of 58.6. This May was the third hottest on record since the organization began collecting data in 1880. Phoenix has hit 120 degrees only three times in recorded history, the last time 22 years ago. The record high, 122 degrees, June 26, 1990. We hit 118 Monday, which the National Weather Service says is rare. In fact, temperatures at that mark or higher have only been recorded 15 times since record-keeping started in 1896. Well, we added to it today. Dozens of flights at Arizona's Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport were delayed or canceled yesterday and today. Airlines are limiting the number of seats sold to prevent the planes from exceeding maximum weight for safe takeoff in hot conditions. Most of the smaller commuter planes have a maximum operating temperature of 118 degrees. Larger planes made by Boeing and Airbus have maximum operating temperatures of 126 and 127 degrees, respectively. The real problem with flying in hot temperatures is similar to the problem faced in high altitudes, thin air. Hotter air is less dense, which means there is less air beneath the wings for lifting the aircraft and less air to flow through the jet engines. To compensate, airlines will keep the weight down, increase the thrust, make sure they take off on long runways. Be careful out there. The main burn center in Phoenix has issued a warning to people to be careful around car interiors and pavement. PetSmart offering free booties so your pets don't burn their paws on concrete and pavement. Stay hydrated. Pray the AC doesn't croak. Oil prices hit a seven-month low. OPEC and non-OPEC producers have agreed to cut production by 1.8 million barrels per day, and it appears they are complying with the deal to cut global output, but still prices are down, as other countries not part of the agreement are pumping more. Both Libya and Nigeria have increased output, and U.S. shale drillers that are staging the longest drilling ramp-up on record. Meanwhile, traders are hoarding an increasing amount of oil in tankers. In the last month alone, explorers drilled 125 more wells in the Permian Basin than they would open, meaning production is poised to surge further when they do turn the spigots on. Hedge fund managers have become very bearish about the outlook for oil prices as production from other countries outside OPEC grows and threatens to undermine the effectiveness of OPEC's output controls. Shares of oil companies were among the worst performers today. The Energy Select Sector Spider ETF, the ticker is XLE, down 1.28%, posting its worst one-day drop since March. West Texas Intermediate Crude, that's the U.S. benchmark, closed at $43.23 a barrel today. That's down from a high of $54.45 on February 23rd, or just more than a 20% decline. And that is the common definition of a bear market. In a speech in Amsterdam to a conference co-sponsored by the central banks of Sweden and the Netherlands, Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren said, "Lower rates may be a more permanent feature on the economic landscape because they reflect broad population trends." Separately, Chicago Fed President Charles Evans said late yesterday the central bank could be done raising rates this year. He reiterated those comments this morning on CNBC and with the Wall Street Journal. He said he supports the current policy of very gradual interest rate hikes and a slow reduction of the balance sheet. Evans said it was important that financial markets realize that inflation can exceed the Fed's 2% target from time to time. Earlier yesterday, New York Fed President William Dudley struck a hawkish tone, arguing against slowing the pace of interest rate increases. And Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fisher said he was worried memories might be fading about the pivotal role housing played in the financial crisis. Fisher said house prices are now high and rising in several countries, perhaps as a result of extended period of low interest rates. Fisher noted that the U.S. government's role in housing is increasing, with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the Federal Housing Administration now the dominant providers of mortgage financing. The Fed's number two said there is more to be done to strengthen the resilience of the housing finance systems. Just taking the possibility of severe stress seriously would help, he said. And government support for housing should always be made explicit. U.S. current account deficit, a measure of the nation's debt to other countries, rose 2.5% to $116.8 billion in the first quarter. The increase in the current account deficit in the fourth quarter was tied to a higher trade deficit in goods such as foreign autos or cell phones and a smaller surplus in primary income. In other words, returns on American-owned assets held abroad. Fourth quarter gap in the current account raised to $114 billion. The current account deficit was 2.5% of GDP in the first quarter. It's up just slightly from 2.4% at the end of 2016. The gap still well below a peak of 6.3% in 2005. Ford Motor will move some production of its Focus small car to China and import the vehicles to the U.S. Ford painted the production shift from Mexico to China, slated in mid-2019, as a purely financial move that will save the company some $500 million in reduced tooling cost. The decision also signals a shift in strategy at Ford, which is responding to dwindling U.S. consumer demand for small cars in favor of more expensive and more profitable trucks and SUVs. Ford said it would invest $900 million at the Kentucky truck plant to build the redesigned Navigator and Ford Expedition. It has contingency plans to build more of the big SUVs at an Ohio plant if demand grows. The current Focus will be phased out of production in Wayne, Michigan, in mid-2018. The Wayne plant will begin building a new Ranger midsize truck late 2018 and a Bronco midsize SUV in 2020. A man killed in a crash last year while using the semi-autonomous driving system on his Tesla Model S sedan kept his hands off the wheel for extended periods of time despite repeated automated warnings not to do so. The National Transportation Safety Board released 500 pages of findings into the May 2016 fatal crash. The incident raised questions about the safety of systems that can perform driving tasks for long stretches with little or no human intervention, but which cannot completely replace human drivers. Not yet, anyway. MSCI said it plans to add mainland Chinese shares to its benchmark emerging markets index. MSCI will add 222 China A large cap shares on a gradual basis beginning next year. The addition of the mainland Chinese shares could be a big boost to the world's second largest stock market, which has until now drawn limited foreign investor interest because of high volatility, frequent trading halts, and limited foreign investor access to the Shanghai and Shenzhen stock markets. The iShares MSCI Emerging Markets ETF, the ticker is EEM, up slightly in after-hours trade. The MSCI Emerging Markets Index is tracked by an estimated $1.6 trillion in assets as of the end of June last year. Legislation to impose new sanctions on Russia and Iran that passed the U.S. Senate nearly unanimously last week has run into a procedural problem that could prevent a quick vote in the House of Representatives. The Countering Iran's Destabilizing Activities Act, which also includes new sanctions against Russia, passed the Senate 98-2 last week, but the measure must still pass the House before it can be sent to President Trump to sign into law or veto, and the House parliamentarian found that the legislation violated a constitutional requirement that any bill that raises revenue for the government must originate in the House. It's something known as a blue slip violation. The Russian ruble just had its worst back-to-back days since February 2016, falling almost 6%. Drop in oil broadened U.S. sanctions, taking a toll. Russian stocks entered a bear market last week after the Senate voted to expand sanctions against Russia. Barclays and four former executives have been charged with conspiracy to commit fraud during the bank's 2008 capital raising from Qatar as it sought to avoid a bailout. The four men are the most senior British banking executives charged since the financial crisis and include former chief executive officer John Varley, former chairman of investment banking for the Middle East Roger Jenkins, ex-wealth chief Thomas Kalaris, and Richard Both, the former European head of the bank's financial institutions group. The details are still a bit sketchy, but it looks like Barclays gave Qatar a loan, and then Qatar made what was presented as an equity investment to regulators. Qatar got a fee for going along with the ruse. Barclays avoided a bailout. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 61, finishing the session at 21,467. S&P 500 down 16 to close at 2,437. And the NASDAQ Composite down 50 at 6,188. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com for live streaming and archived audio, the daily blog, text, audio, and much more at eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com.